Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry. People place so much focus, understandably, on that first pregnancy and that first baby. But my guest today thinks that it can often be a bigger adjustment than we realise to have a second baby. Sarah Ockwell-Smith is a mum of four, and she worked as an antenatal teacher and doula before writing no less than 10 books about parenting. Known as an expert in gentle parenting, Sarah's books range from the best-selling Baby Calm to her most recent one, The Second Baby Book. In it, Sarah talks about how different an experience it can be to have your second baby, yet it's a stage that we often do very little to prepare for. Sarah and I chat about how to navigate pregnancy when you already have a child, how to prepare for the birth when you have childcare to consider, and how to juggle the needs of a newborn and an older child, and lots more. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi.
Great to have you. Great to have you. Okay, Sarah, you are, I was just saying to you just now before we started, you're a bit of a parenting guru.
Yeah, I really hate people calling me that. I actually think the worst one is parenting expert. If I call myself anything, I call myself a parenting author.
Okay.
Because the expert and guru is just all a bit uncomfortable.
Is that because you don't feel like an expert or a guru, or do you have a wider issue with those sort of terms being used?
I think both. It worries me if people think I know everything for two reasons. One, I don't know everything. And two, I think it's really inaccessible if you have somebody sort of up on a pedestal telling you what to do. I think it's just really unachievable. I think there are experts in childcare and child psychology, but I think when it comes to parenting, I just don't think there are. I think there are people who can kind of guide the way a little bit,
yeah.
give you signposts, which is very much the route I've come from. But it's really funny, when I wrote my first book, Baby Calm, many years ago, my very first opening lines was, I am not an expert. I said something like, I think of me as a mum who's been there and done it a bit more than you, a little bit more experienced. And when I submitted it, my editor went crazy and said, you can't say that. People won't buy the book. They want to think that they're reading things from an expert. So I've kind of reluctantly assumed it.
Yeah. It's interesting though, isn't it? Because when did that book come out? When was that published?
Oh, about 8 years ago.
So quite a while. Yeah. And I kind of think that in that time, things have shifted a little bit away from everyone looking to experts.
Mm.
And there's, you know, much more of a trend of looking towards peers and, you know, other mums and dads who are kind of muddling through and picking up a few tips from that person and a few tips from that person. So it almost feels like you were just ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I was an antenatal teacher and a doula. So I created lots of groups of mums, and we'd sit and have chats, and I do like postnatal groups. And that was very much the peer support side that I came from.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. And so your most recent book is The Second Baby Book, isn't it?
It is.
And it feels like that is, it's kind of an area that, probably why you wrote the book, but it kind of feels like a sort of lesser touched area, that we put so much focus on the first baby and the first pregnancy and that big life shift that happens, understandably, because it is a huge life shift.
Yeah.
But actually, what you talk about in this book is the challenges that occur when you have that second baby.
Yeah. I think when I decided to, really everything I write for myself, which sounds really bizarre, but it's kind of like I write all the books now that I wish that I had read 15 years ago that didn't exist. And when I was pregnant with my second one, I think there were about two or three books on the market talking about second babies, and I found them all absolutely terrifying. And then none of them really spoke about the emotional side of things for the mum. So I felt like really anxious, but also like a complete lunatic, thinking like, does nobody else feel like this? So is there something wrong with me, all of these sort of big feelings I'm having? Because nothing really alluded to it. So it was trying to normalise things, but also writing, I think there really is a gap for something for second-time mums, because everybody seems to think that you know what you're doing, and you really don't.
You really don't.
You know, even like with number three or number four, it was I really didn't know what I was doing, because I'd never had a third or a fourth baby before.
Yeah. And you had quite, you talk about this in the book, don't you? You had quite short age gaps between all of your children, or the first
few? Yeah, so all four were born within 4 years of each other.
Wow. I mean, that in itself was a challenge, isn't it?
Yes and no. So we had far less sibling rivalry because they were too little. For me, I did it all when I was really young and got it all out of the way before I was really shattered. And you never get used to sleeping through the night or going out without loads of paraphernalia and nappies. So that was much easier. So you're very much in sort of baby brain and you never get out of it. But in other ways, it was really hard. So the sort of the military precision to do anything. And now I actually find it tougher now they're older. So now I've got four teenagers and I have something like 7 or 8 years of my life where I've either got a child doing GCSEs or A-levels at the same time. So when they're all older and they're all going through the same thing. So there's a saying, isn't there? Little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems.
Yeah.
So I find it much harder now they're older.
That's so interesting. Oddly. That hadn't occurred to me actually. I think when we talk about age gaps, we focus so much on those early years, don't we? And, you know, maybe having a toddler and a newborn and what that's like. And it didn't even occur to me.
You don't even think about them growing up.
No. About the challenges that might take place having four teenagers in close in age.
But on the plus side, I do hopefully get rid of them all together as well. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Freedom. It's quite interesting. So I've got an 8-year age gap between my eldest and my twins, and a 2-minute age gap between my twins. So I've got a really big one and a really small one. But I love in the book how you list kind of the pros and cons for big age gaps and small age gaps. And I think it's really nice that you're basically talking about how there's no right way to do this.
No. I think lots of people come up to me and ask me, you know, what's the best age gap? And I don't think there is one. I think whatever there is, you'll end up coping with it because you have no other option. But also for everything, there's a pro and there's a con. So, and even to be honest, when you look at the research in sort of child development psychology, it all contradicts each other. So you'll get one piece of research that says, oh, this is best. And then a year later, somebody will come out and say, no, this is best. Similarly, the medical literature. So that's a little bit more clearer with things like, you know, the effects of the mum with shorter or longer gaps. And it's generally speaking, the smaller is not so good for the mum's body in healing.
Yeah.
But apart from that, it's so contradictory and it is just entirely individual and unique. Some families will do really well with little age gaps. Some will do much better with a big age gap.
Yeah. So
some get no option even, do they? You know, a lot of people don't get to choose.
Very true.
It happens when it happens.
Very, very true. So what are the issues? What are the main issues around becoming a mum for the second time?
So obviously the first thing to think about is when you have another one, which is a massive issue for a lot of people when they get to make the decision, trying to decide when's the right time. You've also got fertility issues that sometimes happen. Maybe you didn't have them the first time, but you have secondary infertility. Then when you're pregnant, you have the issue of trying to be pregnant and cope with feeling exhausted and having a child to look after, which you didn't do the first time around, when you just think, oh, why did I find it difficult the first time when I could sleep when I wanted to?
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's definitely that thing of looking back and thinking, I thought I had it
hard the first time. And then a massive one is second births, particularly if there was birth trauma or a difficult experience first time. And I used to work, as I say, as an antenatal teacher and a doula, and a lot of my clients were pregnant for the second time and coming to me because they'd had such a difficult experience first time, or they wanted a VBAC or something like that. And then you've got the whole, how do you prepare the firstborn, practical issues. So things like, you know, if you're breastfeeding, do you give up? Do you carry on and tandem feed? What if the other child is not sleeping through the night? What if you want to start them in daycare or start them at school? When should you make that change? You know, actually, the more you think about it, the more there is to be concerned about than when you're pregnant the first time.
Yeah. So clearly a lot of material for a book.
Yeah. It's most of the time when I write, it's about what I don't put in, not what I do put in.
Say that again.
So it's when I write a book, I start off with like a brainstorming session of things that I want to include. Yeah. And invariably I end up with 50% too much content. So you have to try and strike it all out. So it's more, rather than trying to find enough to fill it, it's completely the opposite. It's like, what do I leave out so that it actually is not a 300,000 word book?
Yes. Yeah, no, I can see that. Okay, so let's take those elements one by one and kind of just briefly explore them for the listeners. Okay, so pregnancy.
Yeah.
What can someone listening who might be pregnant and they've got a toddler or an older child or kids, actually they wouldn't have more than one kid because it would be third time pregnancy, fourth time pregnancy, but it probably still applies. What kind of things can they do to kind of have a smooth pregnancy?
Do you know, I think the answer to everything you're going to ask me is drop your standards and expect less. So you have to realise very early on that you can't be super mum. So if you need a rest, you need a rest. And if that means sticking your toddler in front of CBeebies for the day, that's what you have to do. So I think a lot of it is coping rather than thriving, if that makes sense. But not feeling too guilty about it. You know, your child is not going to suffer if they have a few months stuck in front of the TV whilst you try and rest.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because you sometimes, I was a mum of one for a long time, and I used to hear a lot of other mums who had more than one kid say, oh, but you know, you've only got one child, and you know, it's so much harder with two. Do you think that there's kind of, do you think that there is a sort of element of having to drop your standards? And if you've got one child, you have that luxury of being able to have a bit more time.
Some people can do it, really. And I also am quite aware that when I speak about this, if somebody's listening and they haven't had a second baby or they're pregnant with it, it sounds really terrifying. And they're thinking, but I don't want to drop my standards. I want to, you know, do this really well. So I don't want it to sound too negative, but I do. I think there are people who can do it, who are, you know, naturally very patient, very calm, and have quite easy children as well, because all kids are different.
Yeah.
Who will really thrive. But I think for most people, there has to be that acceptance that probably you're not going to be able to do things the same second time round, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. We also know, if you look at research with second born children, they normally are much more relaxed and far less anxious than firstborns. And I think we put everything on our firstborn, which sometimes can make them a little bit more highly strung.
Do you think that it's very common for the parents to relax a little bit too? I mean, kind of, I think the first time round, you do put a lot of pressure on yourself and you want to do everything by the book, and you know, you go to your antenatal classes and you have a real idea of the kind of parent you want to be.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you kind of quite often see on social media people kind of saying, oh, you know, second born, you know, stuck in front of the TV. Kind of, one of my friends, I've just started weaning my twins, and one of my friends said, well, my eldest had steamed carrots for her first food. Yeah. My second had Nutella on pancakes.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember what my third born had for his first food. And it is that feeling of just relaxing slightly and being a bit more kind of just going with it.
But then there's a dichotomy that comes with that. On the one hand, it's much more easy, it's much more enjoyable because you have relaxed a little bit. And on the other hand, you do get those pangs of guilt that, oh, the firstborn, you know, I did properly steamed vegetables delivered from the farm shop, and number two has too much stuff from jars and packets.
Yeah.
So it's easier on one hand, but difficult on the other. And I think maybe that's just sums up being a mum. You know, it's a horrible, wonderful cross between feeling really happy, relaxed and grateful, and the other half feeling like you're not doing as well as you should.
So how do we balance that off? How do we kind of, you know, relax into it second time without the feelings of guilt? Is it possible?
I think you just have to normalise it. You have to realise that everybody feels like this. And if you have a friend who hasn't yet, they will do. You know, as I said earlier, maybe they might find it harder when they hit the teenager years. So I think you have to realise that what we see and hear of people's lives is not really what's happening. It's what they carefully curate to show people, or what they're happy to tell you. you don't see or hear what's going on underneath.
That's so true, because even if you've got friends that you meet up with for a coffee and you have an idea of what their life is like based on what they're telling you, it's only based on what they're telling you.
Exactly.
You're not there in their house 24/7.
And you don't know what they're feeling and you don't see them on their bad days.
Yeah, of course. No, I think that's really important to remember.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
So the logistics of birth can be a bit tricky second time round as well, because the first time round, obviously, it's usually just you and your partner, and you can head off to the hospital or have your home birth or however you're having the baby. Mm-hmm. Second time round, it's a little bit trickier. How can we kind of navigate that fairly smoothly?
With planning, and more planning. So literally, you know, your plan that you want to happen, a backup plan and a backup plan.
Right.
So if you know you're going to be hospital, when you organise childcare, don't just organise one childcare option, have a backup option. And I also talk about writing childcare plans. So as well as writing a birth plan, you write a plan for whoever's going to be caring for the child when you're having the new baby. Do practice runs. I also controversially talk a little bit about don't always rely on the partner or the dad being the birth partner. So I think there's a given that your romantic partner will be with you at the birth.
Yeah.
But actually, sometimes it might be better that you have somebody else with you and the child's father or parent is somewhere else looking after them.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
It really does. And once you're doing it the second time, you're normally a little bit more comfortable to do it without your partner.
Yeah.
And have like your mum or your sister or a friend or a doula with you.
Yeah, because your needs as the mum giving birth quite often are you need somebody there to support you and to be a voice for you and to give you what you need. It doesn't have to be your partner, does it?
No, it really doesn't. When I used to doula at birth, second time births, the plan was always for the couples booking me that usually it was at a home birth. They would book me and I would be there as a backup for the child. So I'd be there to support the mum and the dad. And then, but if the child needed me, then I'd go off with them. And it never, ever, I knew it would never turn out like that.
Yeah.
What it always ended up with is the child needed the dad would go off and take the child somewhere and the mum would decide that she's fine being with the doula instead.
Yeah, that's lovely. And it's probably actually quite a nice way of the dad, like an easy way for the dad to have a role. And because I think sometimes a dad as a birth partner or a partner as a birth partner, it can be quite a tricky role for them to perform. So them kind of going off with the child and, you know, being a parent and looking after the child.
And of course, you know, some dads really need and want to be there and they should be, but I think we shouldn't automatically jump to that conclusion.
Mm. It's funny because you said that's a controversial view, but it actually makes quite a lot of sense to me.
It does, but I think the trouble is, I think we've come down to sort of like father's rights and dad's being allowed to be present. And I think some people think it's a little bit like taking that away and saying, oh, you're just saying it should be a woman's space.
Yeah.
It isn't. It's about everybody being there happy with the role and where they are.
It is. Yeah, you're right. But there is part of me that kind of feels like the person in that room giving birth is probably the most important person in that room.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it's really hard to relax and be in labour and for labour to go well if you're worried about your firstborn.
Yeah.
You know, just if you know the sort of the physiology of labour, it does not progress if you're anxious.
Right.
So if the mum knows that the child is well cared for, actually her labour's likely to be easier.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is mum guilt starts even while you're giving birth.
I think mum guilt even starts before you do a pregnancy test, to be honest, because you start thinking about having another one, and then you start thinking, oh my goodness, am I thinking, you know, this one isn't enough, and what about global warming, and should I really be bringing another child into the world?
And can I ever love a child as much as I love my current child?
And I don't think it ever goes, it just changes.
Yeah, and I think you learn to adapt.
Yeah.
And you learn to kind of listen to mum guilt when it matters and kind of brush it away when it doesn't. I think you learn to kind of identify when it's something that should be listened to or not, don't you? It's an interesting one. It's a whole other podcast, mum guilt, I tell you. Okay, so what are the things that we can do if our first birth didn't go as planned? What are the things that we can do to ensure that we're not absolutely terrified about it second time round?
I think you have to understand what happened first time. So you have to go and talk through with a professional. So something like a birth afterthoughts midwife, counsellor, doula, somebody who can read notes and understand them and kind of pick apart what happened. A lot of the time, there can be a quite clear process that was happening that you aren't aware of. So for instance, first time around, I was diagnosed with failure to progress, which I now realise was just the result of midwife changes and being with somebody who made me feel really uncomfortable.
Right.
But for a long time afterwards, I thought, you know, this is going to go really badly second time around because it was really bad and I couldn't cope with the pain and I had to have the drip to speed things up. Was there something wrong with my body? So it's really important you understand why things happened and understand if you want to have a natural birth. And I don't mean natural like sort of hippie and calling a cesarean an unnatural, just using the medical terminology. But if you want to have a vaginal birth, I guess I probably should say, to understand what happened and what you can do differently and understand your options. And loads of planning. And similarly, you know, I'm not just saying that you have to have a vaginal birth next time. Having a repeat cesarean can be a really positive experience. But I think also you need to understand what happened and you need to put a lot of thought into planning and controlling that. Because if you look at the research on birth, it's not necessarily how or where the baby was born that impacts us the most. It's how much in control we feel of the process.
That's interesting.
So you can have a really unhappy, traumatic home birth with your second, or you can have a really, really positive, enjoyable, lovely, wonderful repeat C-section.
Yeah, that's really interesting. What is interesting for me is that I had not a great birth first time around. That was a vaginal birth.
Mm.
Vaginal?
Whatever.
You hear yourself saying a word and you're like, did I say that right? Which is the American way.
Vaginal.
I had a vaginal birth first time round and it wasn't a great experience.
Yeah.
And second time round when I had twins, I was told at my 12-week scan that I would probably not have to have a C-section because they would never say to me, you have to have one.
Yeah.
But it was advised. And I felt a real sense of relief, not because I was desperate to have a C-section, but because I knew it would be a different experience.
Mm.
And I think I needed it just to be different.
Yeah.
And for those feelings not to kind of reemerge and come back. And that kind of helped me relax during my twin pregnancy.
The lovely thing with a repeat section is that you know it's happening and you can plan for it. That takes away a lot of the unknown.
Yeah, definitely. And that really ties into what you were saying about how just having a bit of a plan and knowing what's going to happen can just make a real difference. Absolutely.
And a backup plan and a flexible plan if you're talking about birth.
Yes. Because the thing about plans is they quite often don't go to plan.
Yeah, well, my second was meant to be a home birth after the first home birth didn't work out, but then I ended up hospitalised with preeclampsia, which I was very unprepared for.
Yeah, yeah. Our bodies don't always do what we expect them to, is the main thing there. So postnatal recovery, lots of us aim to rest a lot.
Mm.
And, you know, we talk a lot about the fourth trimester. When we have another child to care for, that quite often isn't realistic.
Yeah.
So what kind of things can we do to try and have that recovery time?
I think you really need help for a week or two. So whoever that comes from. I think if you know when your baby's going to be born, you're having a C-section, that's easier, isn't it? But perhaps a bit harder to recover from, but you have to have somebody there, whoever that is. If you have a partner, if you have friends, if you have family, if not, then if you have the finances to pay for somebody, or use something like Doula UK's Access Fund if you don't have some. You know, you don't always have to pay to access these services. I think you have to be really led by your body, which is hard. Again, you have to get over the guilt of maybe you can't play with the firstborn like you would want to. Also, I don't think you should enforce, there's this whole 40-night recovery period, isn't there? For me, I would have gone absolutely mental if I'd been doing that. You know, actually, it really helped me to get up, have a shower, put on makeup and go out somewhere. But for others, they're better at home. I think the key is that you do what you feel better with, not what people think you should be doing.
Just listen to your gut instinct.
I think we're really intolerant of mums getting up and about after the birth and getting back to normal if their normal is putting on makeup and doing their hair. We seem to think, you know, why are you all dressed up? This classic thing, wasn't there, with Meghan and Harry introducing their baby.
Yes.
With a two-year-old saying, you know, I bet she feels awful having to get up. But actually, maybe she might have felt better for doing that.
Yeah. I think it is that thing, isn't it? Listening to your gut instinct, not feeling that you have to do anything one way or the other. And making sure that people around you are aware of what you want to do and the fact that actually getting up and washing my hair and going for a walk around the block is making me feel better.
But normality for the firstborn as well is quite important. So a lot of people would keep off their firstborn, say, from school or preschool or nursery. But actually, I think it tends to work better if their routine can be as normal as possible. So don't feel guilty for sending your firstborn off to nursery the day after a new baby arrives.
Yes, absolutely. My twins arrived during half term for my eldest, which was a little bit frustrating because it just meant that we had, you know, an extra child to look after. But what I did was I basically booked in a bunch of my school mum friends to take my eldest off for play dates for the whole day, and they were really happy to help. And actually, it was probably doing them a bit of a favour anyway, because it was creating a bit of, you know, activity for their children. But that was a really nice way of getting help and you know, making sure that we had time to devote to the twins rather than doing that juggle.
Yeah, all of mine went off to school or preschool the day after I had a baby. We never really kept them off because it helped them more just to have that predictability.
That routine, I think, is really important, isn't it? Definitely. And then how do you balance things like the older sibling feeling a bit left out, or, oh, it's all about the baby? It obviously depends on the age. You know, younger children, as you would have experienced, may well have been too young to almost have that thought process. But older children might feel a little bit like, oh, you know, mum and dad don't play with me anymore. They're always busy with the baby.
I think however old the firstborn is, you have to make one-to-one time with them. And when I say one-to-one time, I do mean one-to-one, as in without the baby, or baby is in your case, in the room. A lot of people think, oh, I'll just put the baby in the sling and that will be okay. But that's not one-to-one, that's like two-to-one. And this is where more guilt comes in, because you realise that with your second born, that you want to be as baby-led and responsive to them as you were to the first, which means they don't go over to dad or granny to cry for a little bit whilst you're with your firstborn. But I think it's really important that you get time away from the babies. Even if it's, you know, people, when I say time away, I think people mean that I'm saying go out for the whole day. But even like, I think the most important thing to do is the bedtime for the firstborn. So if you have another adult that you can leave the baby with, and you just go for half an hour and just do your firstborn's bedtime routine, read to them, just you and them. That goes such a long way. Even if that's all you can do, it makes a dramatic difference. And then as the babies get a little bit older, so that you can leave them for a little bit longer, doing things like popping out to the park with the firstborn without the baby. And then when they're even older and perhaps you could leave them for most of the day, then having a whole day out without the babies.
Yeah.
And even now, you know, when mine are much older, I still try and get that one-to-one time. So I will still do as like a special event with one child, like we'll go to the cinema or theatre or something. And I'll still now, if I pop to the shops, and always say he wants to come with me.
Yeah.
So mine are all teenagers now, but it's like, who's going to come to Tesco's with me? Who's going to come to Aldi with me? And that time is just time that we can sit and have a chat.
Yeah.
With him. As I say, you know, I've bought my oldest, who's sitting outside in the green room now, because he's off on A-level study leave. But it's a day that we can have a chat on the train on the way up here, and we'll go out for lunch together that we wouldn't normally have otherwise.
I think it's really important not to underestimate that almost like travel time. If you are just I quite often, every week I take my eldest to her swimming lesson, and actually my favourite part of doing that is the 15-minute drive pool, and we just chat about her day and about random things, and we listen to the radio and sing, and it's very nothingy, but it's also everything.
But it's not. It's a time when your firstborn has got your full attention, which they just can't have if you've got the baby around. Even if the baby's in a sling, they can't have, they know they're present.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be massive, specially planned days out or mornings out. It can be just going to the supermarket.
Yeah. Or just sitting and doing a puzzle together.
Or when the babies are asleep, when the last thing you feel like doing is playing, getting down on the floor with your firstborn and saying, what should we do?
Yeah. Yeah, that, you know what, you're so right. It's that time when you're exhausted and you've got a house to clear up, but you just, it's just spending 10, 15 minutes with your eldest, definitely. Sarah, it has been lovely to chat to you today.
Thank you,
and
Wendy.
I think that, you know, the book is so useful, and I think that everyone who is planning a second or pregnant with their second should rush out and buy it, because it will just be
invaluable. And not be too scared about everything I've said.
Yeah, I think that's the key, isn't it?
It's reassuring once your second's here, but quite scary before they arrive.
Yeah, and I think that, do you say that actually, that there are certain chapters that actually might be worth not reading whilst you're pregnant?
And I always do, but people read them anyway, and then they leave me a negative review, and I'm like, but I did say don't read it.
So read the parts that are relevant, and then save the other parts for later. But thank you, Sarah. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah says that she's not an expert, but wasn't she wise? Thank you to her for coming on, and thanks to you for listening. As always, please rate and review and subscribe to the podcast, and I'll catch up with you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.